Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Well, greetings and salutations, everybody. Welcome to my YouTube channel. My name is John Campia, and this is a companion video. What are companion videos? Well, I'm awfully glad that you asked. See, every day on the John Campus Show, Monday through Friday, we take the second half of the show to take your live comments and questions. However, we normally don't have enough time to get through all the live comments and questions that get sent in. But if you sent in those questions and a tip to support the channel, I want to make sure you don't have to wait too long to get those questions answered. So we gather them all up and we address them here on companion videos. And to let you know, in case you don't know, the way you get a question read on our show is simply by going down into the description of this video and you'll see a tip link. Click on that, or you could enter it in manually at www.streamelements.com/movieblogtv/tip. You'll be getting your comment or question on our show if it's appropriate for our show. And of course, you'll be supporting our channel at the same time and all of us involved with the John Campia Show. Thank you guys so much for your support. Okay, guys, we've got a number of things to get to here, so let's not waste any time and start getting caught up with a question from Andy Hong, who writes in, one of three. I don't have much doubt that Discovery will do a good job with Warner Brothers, especially after you've been hyping it up for me. Well, fingers crossed. I hope it goes well. It might go well, it may not, but fingers crossed, I have faith in it. Anyway, you're like a human trailer for them, LOL. However, how will Discovery deal with ethics moving forward with Warner Brothers? It's concerning, two of three, that Warner Brothers tossed their creatives and partners aside with their same-day premieres on HBO Max. Yeah, that was a dick move of them for sure, which should still be renamed to Soggy Ass. However, I'm more concerned about how they will handle situations like Hartley Sawyer, Elongated Man from The Flash, and Ezra Miller's choking incident. Would Discovery handle situations like that with more consistency in the future than Warner Brothers did? I abhor that Warner Brothers chose to remain silent on the Ezra Miller situation and hope that Discovery will maintain better ethic principles. All right, thanks a lot for sending that in, Andy. Now, for those of you who don't know what Andy's talking about, so Warner Brothers is about to be acquired. Discovery, yes, the network that does, you know, the home improvement shows and the food shows and all that kind of stuff, Discovery is buying Warner Brothers. And everything that Warner Brothers entails, HBO and all that kind of stuff, it's all going to Discovery. They're taking it over. And that transition will happen sometime in the first quarter, I believe, of 2022. So the question becomes, how will they handle ethical situations? Because Warner Brothers, well, let's face it, all studios have their ethical slip-ups. All businesses, hell, all people have their ethical slip-ups. Warner Brothers is no different. A couple of those have been like the way they sandbagged all their own talent and partners by making that big announcement that all of our 2021 movies are going to come out on HBO Max. Meanwhile, all the directors and producers and their financing partners went, what? Excuse me? Like, they totally backstabbed them, caught them totally off guard, sandbagged them. One of the bigger problems, though, of course, that we've talked a bunch on this show about was, of course, the incident with Ezra Miller, where he was caught on video putting his hands on the throat of a girl and taking her down to the ground. Warner Brothers has never mentioned it. They've never mentioned it. Their whole philosophy was, shh, don't talk about it and people will forget. Well, they're not, the people are talking about, what should we do? Let it slip out that Michael Keaton's going to be in the Flash movie. Jingle shiny keys in front of the people and they'll forget all about the Ezra Miller stuff. And they did, and they were right. We all forgot about it. But it was especially concerning when just like a week or two or whatever, a little bit of time earlier than that, the guy who played Elongated Man in the Flash, Hartley Sawyer, I always mispronounce his name, I'm sure, but they fired him because of some tweets he had written 5, 6, 7, 8 years earlier. They found some tweets that were distasteful, sure, but they fired him instantly. Ezra Miller's caught on video with his hands on a girl's throat, taking her to the ground, never even mentioned it. It's that kind of inconsistency that equals hypocrisy, really, that left some fans like myself feeling like, wow, that was kind of scummy. Will Discovery handle that any better? I gotta hope so. I've gotta hope so. I mean, the reality is we don't know. Discovery and their Zaslav, their CEO of Discovery, they've never owned like a production company like this. They're a very different kind of production company. So I'm sure they've probably never come across these specific kinds of issues. It is going to be interesting to see how it's dealt with and how they deal with them. But I'm going to guess that they will deal with it better, but we won't know until it actually happens. So they can say they'll handle it better. Let's see if they actually do. All right. Good question, Andy. Next up, we got Dangerous D who writes, "Hey, John, after a few episodes, Why the Last Man was canceled by FX, but some fans are still asking for a second season. Stephen King is also begging for another season. Some are thinking HBO Max might pick up the series since DC Comics distributed the comic series." Here's the thing. I really don't know if they will. Why the Last Man was never able to, I mean, granted, in its very short run, was never really able to garner a strong following. And part of that was because the show's just not that good. Now, that's a subjective opinion, but that's my opinion. The show just wasn't very good. I was excited for this show. You know I was excited for this show. And I tried to get into it, and it just wasn't very good. It wasn't able to garner that big of an audience. I don't know why HBO would pick it up. I don't know what their motivation would be. It's not going to be a profit maker. They're not going to get a lot of new subscribers for it. If people weren't tuning in for it on another network, they're not about to pay $15 a month to sign up for HBO Max to watch it. So anything's possible. Absolutely anything is possible, but I have my doubts anybody else will pick it up. I have a feeling, and I'm just guessing here. I have a feeling that it'll probably get rebooted in some way, shape, or form, say 3 or 4 years down the line, but we'll see what happens. All right. Thanks for adding that in, Dangerous. Next up, Dangerous D also writes, "Hey, John, Dark Side of Fanboys has shown its ugly head. TMZ is reporting that the artists and production staff that revealed John Kent's bisexual has received death threats from angry fans. It's so bad that they requested LAPD to keep an eye out. This behavior is not what being a fan is supposed to act. Nobody's life is worth threatening just because you don't like a storyline. This is not going to anybody's mind, and all you're doing is showing your own ignorance." Now, for those of you who don't know what Dangerous D is talking about, a little while ago, very short time ago, it got revealed that Jonathan Kent, the son of Clark Kent, has donned the Superman moniker for now. Obviously, Clark Kent's going to be Superman again, but has recently taken over his father's moniker of Superman. And this Superman, Jonathan Kent, he's a young man, revealed he's going to be bisexual. Okay, fine. But some people with certain political agendas did not like that. Did not like that at all. They don't like that it's not 1963 anymore. They were right pissed off about it. So apparently it got so bad that now the police are having to patrol the houses and homes of some of the artists and people working on that title because they've been receiving death threats for having the audacity to say that this new character, this Jonathan Kent character, is bisexual. It is some of the most messed up, like, I don't know how far down the stupid ladder you have to be to be that. And nobody's saying you have to enjoy it. Nobody's saying you have to approve of it. Like, there's lots of things in this world, in this life that, I don't like that and I don't approve that. And that's not to my taste and whatever. That's fine. Nobody says you have to go along with it. Nobody says you have to be happy about it. You have to be on a certain rung of the stupid ladder to have it affect you so deeply. You've got to make death threats. And it's pathetic and it's sad. These are cousin humping, basement dwelling losers. It's unfortunate that these type of, knuckle draggers actually exist in our world, but they do. So it's unfortunate and it sucks, but I'm hoping that they get that behind them as fast as they can. All right, next up, Robin writes, "Hey, John. So I know I'm in the minority, but I'm massively missing Star Wars on the big screen." Me too. "Personally, I want more Jedi Force-based stories. I know at one point Jedi origin story / Force user story was going to be directed by the Game of Thrones guys. I'm not sure that that's true. Game of Thrones guys making a Jedi origin story What's the chance that we see that story on the big screen or Knights of the Old Republic? Could that be what Feige or Taika is making? Really missing that kind of Star Wars. Yeah, listen, I'll tell you what, everybody knows I really didn't like The Rise of Skywalker. Did not like that movie at all. But disliking that movie as much as I did has only made me more hungry for more Star Wars movies on the big screen. Because I really love Force Awakens, and I loved Rogue One, and I really liked Solo. I even liked The Last Jedi. I had some issues with The Last Jedi. I had some serious issues with The Last Jedi, but I still liked it. I still, overall, I thought it was a good package, but I hated The Rise of Skywalker. I hated that movie. I was so sad. I remember I was at the premiere of it, and I came out of the premiere, walking between the premiere and going to the after party, and I stopped and shot my right out of the theater reaction to it. And I was like, ah, guys, this ain't it. Like, I was very disappointed. Anyway, that being said, that has only deepened my hunger for wanting to get more Star Wars. Now, if I'm not mistaken, the Game of Thrones guys, they were never doing a Jedi origin story. I believe they were going to do Old Republic. I believe I heard they were going to do Old Republic. Now, Old Republic can mean a lot, and Old Republic spans a lot of time. But I'm okay. Listen, I don't need my Star Wars movies to be Jedi-based. The Star Wars galaxy is a big, big galaxy. It does not have to be Jedi-based. You know, season one of The Mandalorian proved you don't need to be Jedi-based. Well, yeah, Baby Yoda was a Force user, but that was, you know, that's not the main gist of it. The Mandalorian was the main gist of it. I don't think you have to have Force users to be the center of the Star Wars universe all the time, but I'm down for it because I love Jedi and Sith. So my guess is Taika and Kevin Feige, their projects are probably not going to be origins of the Jedi or anything like that. I don't know why you have to demystify the origins of the Jedi or the Sith anyway. One of the big mistakes of Star Wars, I think, ever since the prequels, was the demystifying of things, like trying to explain the Force as the midichlorians
live in your blood. You know, just take a little blood sample. We'll find out if you got lots of good midichlorian. Oh, your midichlorians aren't so good. Here, take some midichlorian Viagra. We got the special midichlorian Viagra. It'll stiffen up your midichlorians and you'll have more Force. You want more Force? I hated that. And they've continued it. They've done more to try to demystify things in Star Wars. And going back to the origins of the Jedi, I don't think I'm interested in that. And maybe a lot of other people would be. I'm saying I'm not. But stuff said in the Old Republic or whatever, I don't know. We'll have to see. We'll have to see. All right. Next up, we go over to K Major, who writes, John, I'm here to ask the big questions. What's the trick behind refrigerator shots in film/TV? Is it a prop fridge with an open back, or is there a camera in the actual fridge? I need to know. I have no doubt the answer is both. I think probably in, you know, older years, there was probably a facade fridge. You know, it looks like a fridge, but there's no back to it. And the camera just sat where the back of the fridge was supposed to be. And it made it look like it was a fridge. But today you can have such high quality cameras that are so small. I have no doubt that probably most of those shots are actually cameras. I mean, hell, look, oh, my GoPro is over there. I can't reach it right now, but I mean, my 5K GoPro, my 5.6K GoPro is like this big. You know, the camera I'm shooting this on right now, the Sony a6400, or hey, the Sony a7C. I mean, these are tiny cameras. You can just plop in the back of a fridge, hit record, and just go through it. So I'm sure in days gone by, probably facade fridges with a fake back. But probably today, I'm going to guess they probably just slap a real camera in the fridge because they can do that. And maybe for certain shots, they do the facades as well. All right. It's actually a good question, K Major. All right. Next up, Ethan Holgate writes, hey, John, I saw Last Night in Soho. Everybody's seen Last Night in Soho except me. And oh my God, it was fantastic. Edgar Wright has done it again. Thomasin McKenzie was amazing. Loved her so much in this. Probably my favorite performance from her. Well, not that she's had a lot of performances yet. It's in my top five movies of the year. Highly recommend it. Yeah, I'm getting really damn jealous and angry. And I can't go see it till Anne gets back. Actually, when I'm done recording this video, I'm going to go get my car, drive to the Ontario airport, and go pick up Anne. She's flying back tonight. Now, I'm not going to see it tomorrow night either because we're going to go see Eternals again. That'll be my fourth screening of Eternals. So I'm hoping Friday. I'm hoping to double up with a double feature on Friday of seeing Antlers
and Last Night in Soho. So that's my plan. But everybody's writing in talking about how much they love Last Night in Soho. I got to get out to it this weekend. All right. Thanks for that, Ethan. Next up, Joel writes, "Hey, John, I love the show. Thank you so much. And hope you are having a great day." I did have a great day. Thank you. "I was wondering why movies and shows have multiple producers instead of having just one. What is the job of a producer?" All right. Well, I'm not going to go into the full thing of this because this would take too long. Basically this, the producer, the true real producer behind a movie, is the person ultimately responsible for the film. They are the person in charge. They acquire the rights to the script. They hire the director. They do, and it's some, it's not necessarily just one person do it. Sometimes it's a couple of them, but they, it's their movie. That's why at the Academy Awards, when Best Picture is given out, it's not the director who goes up and accepts it most of the time. Sometimes the director's a producer as well, but it's usually the producer or the producers. Now, here's where it gets complicated. There can be like 17 people with a producer credit on a movie. Everything from producer, executive producer, senior producer, associate producer, assistant producer, all these different titles. Hell, somebody can get a producer credit for, and this has happened, somebody wanted somebody else on a movie. They talked to a guy who knew that other person, and they said, okay, I'll arrange, I'll make the contact, I'll get in touch with this person, I'll set up a meeting with you. And the whole thing is that it's up to them to get them together. And just for doing that, they get a producer credit. Steven Spielberg, the greatest filmmaker, I believe, of all time. He is a great producer. And obviously, I think the greatest director of all time. And he's also a great producer. But there's a number of credits, a number of producer credits where he literally did nothing on the movie. He may have consulted on one phone call. He may have had one sit-down meeting. Sometimes I'm sure he just agreed to let his name be on it as a producer in exchange for a check. It happens. So it's very, very confusing for a lot of people. A lot of times actors will be in a movie, but they want a producer credit as well. All that kind of stuff. But they're not the producer. So it's difficult. You got to cut through all that. And that's why it's very, very confusing. Like through all of it, through those 18, 25 producers, there is one or two core people who are truly the producers of the movie. And you can't always just figure out who those are by looking at the IMDb page, unfortunately. It's very nebulous sometimes. It's very nebulous. All right, next up. KW Garrett 83 writes, "Dune in IMAX was epic and amazing. Can't wait for part two. Amused to later learn House Ordos is not canon to the book, so left out of the movie. Last Duel was excellent. Glad you recommended it. French Dispatch was good, though the three stories were disconnected." Well, that's a lot in one. But yeah, listen, I am glad you checked out The Last Duel because nobody else did. Nobody else did. I didn't completely love The Last Duel. Like, I thought The Last Duel was very good. Fantastic performances, really good core story, fantastic dynamic between the characters. I just thought the narrative structure they chose of telling it the same story told three different times from three different perspectives and stuff like that. Sometimes that narrative structure can work very well in a movie. I found for whatever reason, it didn't serve this movie very well and only slowed the movie down. But other than that, I thought it was really good, but nobody went to go see it. That movie flopped so hard. It's crazy. So I'm glad you went to go see KW. All right. Next up, KW Garrett also writes, "Watch Tango Shalom." Nice. That's Robert Meyer Burnett's movie. "With my Jewish girlfriend. Very helpful to have her explain the Hasidic culture during the movie. We really enjoyed it. Very charming, uplifting story. I was surprised to learn the priest actor died in 2017. Why was this film on the shelf for so long?" Listen, Robert Meyer Burnett has been working on this film for years. For years. Listen, filmmaking is a big thing and it's an expensive thing. And it takes time and it takes money. And the less money you have, the longer time it's going to take. But you guys know, Rob's been working on that movie for years, trying to work with the editing, then the sound design. He took over the post-production process. And then a lot of stuff you're doing, you're trying to get people to do stuff for free because you don't have enough finances. And then you're trying to get more finances. And then it's a long, arduous process, man. It is a long, arduous process. The big studios make it look easy. We can shoot a movie now, have it in theaters in a year and a half. Beautiful. for a lot of independent filmmakers, it can be a much longer road than that. So that's Rob's experience there is a good example of that. All right. I'm glad you checked out the film and supported it, though, KW. All right. 310 to Yuma writes, it's one of my favorite Westerns. While I'm disheartened to see Eternal's Rotten Tomatoes score drop so low, I have to draw your attention to a new movie. It's called The Harder They Fall. The Rotten Tomato audience and critic scores are at 90%, with some calling it the new Black Panther Best Picture nomination. I don't know if you know this, 310 to Yuma, but I actually saw the film a few weeks ago. I saw an early screening of it. And I'm being kind when I say I think that movie is absolute shit. It's absolutely garbage. It's a terrible movie. And I was so excited for that movie. I thought the trailer was badass. It's one of my favorite ensemble casts of the year. I mean, you got Idris Elba, you got Lakeith, you got Jonathan Majors, huge, incredible cast. It's awesome. And the movie was absolute shite. And this is going to be one of those situations. I think every film fan has this experience for some movies where they feel one way about a movie, see the consensus from the critics or other fans is completely opposite from theirs, and you just scratch your head. I have no idea what movie everybody else watched. Honestly, I have no idea what movie anybody else watched. This movie is terrible. It's awful. It makes no sense. They all do the stupidest things. It is rubbish. It's so bad, you could even see the fake building props in the shots. Like, it's terrible. It's awful. I have no idea what movie these other people saw, but I wish I saw that movie. Whatever movie it is that they saw, I wish I saw that movie, because the one I saw was absolute garbage. But it's the worst film of the year. What year did Thunder Force come out? Okay, if Thunder Force did not come out this year, it's the worst film of the year. But that's just me. That's my opinion. Anyway, Free Brittany writes, theory on Morbius. Venom and Morbius are set in their own universe that is separate from the MCU. The M. Cretan character that we see in Morbius is not Vulture, or the Michael Keaton, that's with a K. Michael Keaton character that we see in Morbius is not Vulture. Morbius gets transported to Sam Raimi's Spider-Man universe when Doctor Strange does his multiverse spell. I don't know that I buy that. I mean, he's clearly in the same universe as Venom because he references Venom directly, right? Maybe the Michael Keaton we see in the trailer is that universe's version of Michael Keaton's character and not the same one that we knew from Spider-Man Homecoming. That's a totally plausible theory. That's a total plausible theory. So, but that Morbius, who's in a separate cinematic universe from Doctor Strange, gets transported from his other universe into yet another universe. I don't know that I buy that. Interesting theory. Let's see if it happens. But for now, I'll say I don't buy it. But that's a great way of thinking. You're thinking outside the box, Free Brittany, and I appreciate that. All right. Dangerous D writes, hey, John. Somebody asked you, can Squid Games be adapted to an Aimer, God, guys, please spell check and please proofread your stuff before you write in. I'm struggling with this. Somebody asked you, can Squid Games be adapted to an Aimer? I don't know what that means. Version you said, know that this known. I got to skip. I'm sorry, Dangerous D. I try to get through as many of your questions as I can, but if I have to struggle as hard as this to just read your questions, please calmly and slowly take time to proofread your thing. I'm going to assume maybe English isn't your first language. Shit, man, you can speak a second language better than I can. That's for damn sure. But I just take your time, go slow, try to make it so I'd be able to read it without much problem. All right. But I appreciate you, man. I appreciate you. All right. Willow writes, I like Chris Pratt and all, but why couldn't they have gotten an actual cat to voice Garfield? Why couldn't they get an actual cat to voice Garfield? In all seriousness, though, how do you feel about voice actors portraying characters that's a different race / ethnicity, like Hank Azaria voicing Apu? I have no problem with it. These are fictional make-believe characters. I have no problem with it. These are fictional make-believe, fictitious characters that aren't real. Hell, they're not even supposed to be physically real. These are animated, fake, fictional characters. I really don't care. I really don't. You know, as an Italian, I like seeing my Italian representation, but, you know, they just cast the Mario movie and they got a couple, including Chris Pratt, they got a couple of non-Italian guys to voice these very traditional Italian characters. Traditionally, they are very, very Italian characters. It's a me, Mario. You know, almost offensively Italian, depending on how you ask it. I don't care. Actors are people who portray other people that they are not. Actors play characters that they are not in real life. I don't expect the actor you get to play Hitler in a movie to actually be a Nazi. I don't expect that. I don't expect whoever you get to play Mr. Spock in the next incarnation of Star Trek to actually be an alien Vulcan. Now, there are certain extreme situations where, you know, you want to get them close to the character so the character can be believable. But in an animated voicing, personally, I don't care. Now, I'm not sitting here and pointing my fingers at people who do have a problem with it and saying, you're stupid if you have a problem with that. I'm not saying that. You're asking me how I feel about it. I'm just telling you how I feel about it. I'm not blaming anybody else for how they may feel about it. I'm just saying for me, I have no problem with it. Why don't I have a problem with it? Because actors are people who portray characters that they are not in real life. These are make-believe fictitious characters for the most part, you know, unless you're telling a true story or something. But yeah, me, myself, I don't have an issue with it. Don't have an issue with it. But I'm not putting down anybody else who does have an issue with it. I'm just telling you how I feel about it. That's all. All right. Next up. Sorry, I keep looking at my watch because my wife is, like I said, my wife is flying in. I just want to make sure, in case she's texting me or anything, I want to make sure I keep up to date with what's going on with her. All right. Next up. Chris Sheehy writes, I disagree with your take on Spidey, at least somewhat. I believe Spidey's standalone movies will continue to be done with Marvel Studios. However, I do think he'll pop up in Sony movies like Venom 3. I think that's more what Feige was saying, but who knows? I mean, that's a possibility. Listen, we did a whole story today on the John Campia show that was basically expressing that, yeah, I think that you're going to see Spider-Man leave. I think the evidence is mounting. I mean, the very fact that John Watts is no longer on Spider-Man, the guy who's directed all of the MCU Spider-Man movies, he's now moving on to Fantastic Four. I think that tells us something. Not absolutely, but I personally think that's telling us something. That being said, I also took some time today to talk about some very valid reasons why I think you should believe he's staying in the MCU. So while I believe he is leaving, I think there is more evidence saying that he's leaving than there is saying that he's staying. The fact of the matter is there is evidence that he could stay. And I'm not going to fall out of my seat in shock if we watch No Way Home and then it makes it clear that he's staying in the MCU. I won't fall out of my seat in shock. I'll be a little bit surprised, but not huge shock. I think that's a very valid possibility. But if I had to bet $5 on it, the short deal time that they re-upped instead of a long-term deal, Tom Holland's words saying we shot this as the end of a franchise, Kevin Feige's words saying Spider-Man's going to be a character who can go between cinematic universes, the fact that John Watts, the director of all three Spider-Man movies, is no longer on Spider-Man. He's going over to do Fantastic Four. He's jumping to a new property. I think all these things point to Spider-Man leaving. But I don't know that he is. It's just a guess. And I'm not standing on this. I'm not, like, there are certain things I'll say. I 100% guarantee you this. I'm not that way with this prediction. This is just a guess. This is just me fantasizing. This is just me theorizing. But it is, again, if I was forced to bet $5, that's the way I would bet my $5. All right. Next up, we got Grayson Cook, who writes, hey, John. I just recently discovered your show and I love it. Well, thank you so much, Grayson. And I love it and listen to it every day. I'm a massive Star Wars fan and I wanted to know if you would share your thoughts on the sequels. They aren't perfect, but I really enjoy them. What are your thoughts? Yeah, I've talked about these a bunch, Grayson, but basically this. I completely adored The Force Awakens. As a matter of fact, The Force Awakens is my favorite Star Wars movie that's not one of the original three. Like, to me, you got the original trilogy that is way up here. Then about down here, you got, I think, Force Awakens, then Rogue One, then Solo, then Last Jedi, and then Rise of Skywalker, and then the three prequels. Actually, I dislike the Rise of Skywalker so much, I might even put one of the prequels above it. I think I might actually put the Revenge of the Sith above the Rise of Skywalker. Not 100% sure about that, but I think I do. But that's how much I dislike the Rise. So that's my basic feeling. It went from, it was a big decline. Like, I loved Force Awakens. I liked the Last Jedi. I liked it, but I had a number of issues with it. And then I just completely hated Rise of Skywalker. So yeah, that was, it's, what really became apparent was they never started shooting these movies with a plan. They just decided to wing it. They just decided, let's make the first movie, and then we'll just figure out what to do in the second movie when the time comes. Not the way to do it. They never had a plan. And that became more and more apparent, especially once you got to The Rise of Skywalker. It's like, none of this makes any sense considering the events of The Force Awakens, and like, none of this makes any sense, but it is what it is. So those are my thoughts on it, Grayson. Anyway, thanks a lot for writing in, man, and it's great to have you here as a viewer, my friend. All right, next up, Russell Amador writes, "Hey John, with all the negative reviews pouring in and release schedule for tomorrow, is it safe to say 100 million can't be achieved? What are your current box office predictions for this one? Oh, and will you see it as many times as Shang-Chi?" I don't think I'll see it as many times as Shang-Chi. Like, I'm going to assume you're talking about Eternals, by the way. I'm going to go see it for my fourth screening tomorrow. I've seen Shang-Chi 7 times. I saw it 4 times before it ever opened in theaters, and then I saw it 3 times after it opened in theaters. So I saw Shang-Chi 7 times. I think 4 might be it. I think 4 might be it until it comes out on home video, either on Disney Plus or whatever. I'll watch it again, definitely, once it comes out on home video, but I think 4 will be my max. I like this movie. I think it's quite good, but it's not, you know, some people suggesting, you know, we heard whispers, people I know inside Disney saying the people at Disney kind of think this might be the best MCU film ever. I certainly don't think it is. I don't even think it's the best MCU movie of the year. I mean, that's Shang-Chi. But I like it quite a bit. Going to go see it for a fourth time tomorrow. But listen, I'll tell you what. Did I think 100 million was possible? Yeah. But my guess for where Eternals was going to come in was always under 100 million. I didn't see Eternals making 100 million. It's a brand new property, unknown characters, all that kind of stuff. Shang-Chi did great with 70, 75 million, whatever that was. That was the same stat. So I kind of pegged this one at 70 or something like that. Then I lowered my guess to 50. So now I'm hearing some projections are saying 70 to 80. So maybe I need to come up again. But the bottom line is this. I never expected Eternals to hit 100 million anyway. Possible? Sure. Still possible, but I don't think it will. So that's my guess right now. We'll see what happens. I'm going to be very curious to see how the audience reacts to this movie. All right, next up, Tribal Chief writes, If you had asked me 6 months ago who would have the higher Rotten Tomatoes score, Venom 2 or Eternals, I would have said Eternals easily. You and me both, brother. Crazy to think Venom 2 with a 60% has a better critic score than Eternals at a 54%. By the way, I think it's at 53% now. Let me finish reading this. Even though they're pretty close and I love the Venom movies. I agree. Now, actually, give me a second here. I'm going to look this up because I looked it up this morning. As of this morning, our friend the Eternals was sitting at a 53%. Let's see if it still is. Oh, it's holding at 53%. Another 60 reviews got added since this morning, and it seems to have stopped its slide. The slide, at least for now, appears to have stopped. So it's at 53% right now. Yeah, I don't know, man. I would have easily bet if I could time travel right now and you could go back in time, let's say 2.5 months or however, just before Venom 2 came out, and got to John 2.5 months ago and bet me $1,000 and said, hey, John, I'll bet you $1,000 that Venom 2 will have a higher Rotten Tomatoes critic rating than Eternals will. I would have taken that bet. John from 2.5 months ago would have taken that bet easy and laughed in your face for making such a stupid bet. Well, now look at it. By the way, I really like Venom 2 as well. These are both movies I really like. I really like Venom 2 and I really like Eternal. So there's that. All right. Next up, we've got Bad Boogie Hex, who writes, I like the Morbius trailer, but I made the mistake of looking up who wrote the film. Turns out it's the geniuses behind The Last Witch Hunter, Gods of Egypt, and Dracula Untold. Excitement tempered. I'm hoping for the best, but why hire such mediocre talent? So it's Brett something or other and his partner something. I can't remember their names right now. I'll tell you the reason they got the Morbius job. They got the Morbius job because of their work on Lost in Space, the Netflix series, which is a pretty good series. I don't personally love it, but I know several people that love that series. It's got very strong critic and audience ratings. I think their critic and audience ratings are both hovering around the 80%, give or take a little bit, but it's right around the 80% mark. That's what got them that gig. The tone and the scope and everything they did with Lost in Space, not the movie from like 2000, whatever, but the Netflix series Lost in Space, that was pretty well received by critics and audiences alike. And they did a pretty good job on that. And I think that's the series that got them the job on Morbius. And you guys remember too, they also went and got their pitch from them and that's where it's at. So look, I don't think Dracula Untold is the worst movie. Gods of Egypt is pretty bad. Last Witch Hunter is pretty bad. If their resume ended there, I would be very worried. I'm not going to lie to you. I would be very worried. But their most recent work showed that they are capable of a different level of material than the stuff we'd seen from them from a number of years ago, Dracula Untold, Gods of Egypt. Like, those are all older things. Actually, let me look this up if I can. Give me one quick second here to see if I can find this. I am looking for, what am I looking for? I'm looking for Morbius on IMDb. And I know it's Brett something. Burke Sharpless and Matt Sasma were the guys. So let's take a look at this though. Like, they did Dracula Untold, which was 7 years ago. Last Witch Hunter, which was 6 years ago. And Gods of Egypt, which was 5 years ago. So, I mean, and then they did Power Rangers, and Power Rangers, great, they didn't write the screenplay, they just did the story for it. I was mocking Power Rangers right up until the day it came out, and then I actually ended up kind of liking Power Rangers. So I'll call Power Rangers a push, because they didn't actually do the screenplay, they just did the story by, and I actually thought the story for Power Rangers was pretty good. But then you fast forward a couple of years, and you get their work on Lost in Space. And that, you know, Hollywood is very much a what have you done for me lately kind of business. And they have a very short memory and they don't look too far back. And that's the one that makes me go, okay. Like I said, if all that was on their resume was Gods of Egypt and Last Witch Hunter, I'd be very concerned. But they have now shown that they can produce stuff that's actually on another level. And so I'm going to rely on that for now. We'll see how it goes up. Maybe it'll be awesome. Maybe it'll suck, but I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt for now. All right. Burt Macklin, FBI. That's, of course, Andy's imaginary FBI character in Parks and Rec, as played by Chris Pratt, who writes, we've had a lot of different genres mixed into the MCU. Yes, we have. From day one of the Eternals trailer, I said this was Marvel's attempt at a DC movie. It's not. It's totally not. Gods Among Us. Do you think it shares common faults with what critics and audiences have disliked from a DC film? No. And there's this narrative going around by all these people who have not seen the movie. There is nothing about this movie, and this is neither a good thing or a bad thing. I'm just saying there's nothing about this movie at all that feels like it's trying to be a DC movie, like not in the least. As somebody who's seen the film three times, there is nothing good or bad that makes it feel like it's at all trying to be a DC movie. Like, in the least. The one thing that I will say that it shares maybe a fault of some DCU movies, but it's also a common fault of Marvel movies, is sometimes it's a questionable character. Like, I loved Wonder Woman. I love the first Wonder Woman. But their villain in it, the Ares thing, that was a lame thing. But the rest of the movie was great. I'll say that's kind of similar to what's going on in Eternals for me. But no, I don't feel like there's any similarity there at all. I mean, other people who watch it, it's all subjective experience. Maybe once you see it, maybe you will feel that. But I've seen the film 3 times and I've never once felt that way, like in the least. Anyway, all right, next up. Man, I love the username, by the way, Burt Macklin, FBI. All right, Tachi Victor writes, "Hey, John, I really got to thank you for introducing me to What We Do in the Shadows. I love that show. I love the show so much, and I hope it gets renewed. I believe I heard it already has been renewed. It has been renewed for the next season. I'm pretty positive I heard that. Anyway, also, what did you think of the finale? My favorite episode of the season might be the Wellness Center. The Wellness Center one was great. I have still not seen the finale because Anne's been away. What We Do in the Shadows is one of the TV shows. There's not a lot of TV shows that Anne and I watch together. We watch Foundation together. We watch What We Do in the Shadows together. And there's one other. What's the other one we're watching together right now? I can't remember off the top, but there's three. There's three shows we watch together right now, and I cannot watch them without her being in here. I definitely couldn't watch the finale for What We Do in the Shadows until she gets back. So I cannot wait to watch it, though. And I did love that Wellness Center episode. Okay, next up. Norwegian writes, "Had a productive Halloween weekend. Went to a local horror movie festival, and I saw 11 movies, including Last Night in Soho, The Deep House. Oh, my God. I want to see The Deep House so badly. We talked about the trailer for it. One of the coolest concepts for a horror movie. For those of you who missed us talking about it, the idea is, like, off in the deep woods, this couple go, like, diving in these lakes, and they stumble across a full house at the bottom of a lake. Like, way underwater, a fully preserved house under the water at the bottom of the lake, and it's haunted. Craziest concept for horror. I cannot wait to see that. Anyway, Antlers, which I'm very excited to see. The Sadness, Had a Blast. That sounds like a good Halloween weekend, Norwegian. I'm glad you had that experience, dude, and I'm very jealous you had a chance to see The Deep House. Anyway, BK Dan writes, "John, my belief about the theory given by the lawyer shouldn't be submitted by the lawyer. The investigation team may consider it some form of obstruction." No, that's not how the law works, BK. "The accusations and theories should only come from investigators. That's their job." Okay, so obviously what BK is referring to here is on the John Campus show earlier today, we were talking about the shooting accident on the set of Rust when the cinematographer tragically lost her life. And the lawyers for the armorer on set of Rust, the person responsible for handling the guns, the armorer's lawyer mentioned in an interview on the Today Show that they have a theory that somebody purposefully slipped a live round of ammunition in with the blanks to purposefully try to sabotage the set of the movie. Now, they didn't offer any evidence for that. They were just saying that's one of the things we consider a possibility. That a lawyer whose job it is to present alternate possibilities, that's their job. And a lawyer expressing an opinion about a possibility is not obstruction of justice. Now, something that could maybe, I'm going to make up a fake theoretical situation here. Something that maybe could fall under the category of obstruction is if a sensitive piece of information that was like ordered sealed information was supposed to be remain classified and not known, and the lawyer was made aware of it, blah, lawyer going out and then making that public information, that might be able to be considered obstruction of justice. But a lawyer expressing a theory is no different than you and me at home getting on Twitter and saying, "I think it was this person's fault." Well, you're allowed to express an opinion. Like, that's not obstruction of justice. So no, it is the lawyer's job to cast any kind of doubt on the responsibility or guilt of their own client. And by the way, I in no way, shape, or form think the armorer may or may not be guilty of anything at all. Like, we don't know the facts, so I'm not saying that at all. But that's the lawyer's job, is to present alternate possibilities, All that kind of stuff. So no, none of what the lawyer just did was either unethical or illegal, and certainly not obstruction. So there's just that. All right. Thanks a lot for that, BK. Next up, Marcus writes, "While I believe that Spider-Man is staying in the MCU, I also think it's possible that he, quote unquote, leaves. Is it possible that Spider-Man doesn't physically leave the MCU, but could Sony's universe be like the new Netflix, same universe, but not acknowledged by the MCU films?" No, I don't think that's where they're going with this. I don't think that serves Sony. I don't think that serves Marvel at all. I don't think that's to either of their benefit. So I really don't think, I mean, listen, Marcus, I'm not telling you, I know factually that's not the case. It's that could be possible, but you're asking me if I think that's what they're doing. I don't see anything there for that. So no, I don't think that's what they're doing. I still think, while I believe that Spider-Man is going to go back over to Sony, I think they're going to leave the door open that once in a while he can pop his head up in the MCU. But even when he does that, Sony's going to have absolute veto power over anything he does in the MCU. So it'll be interesting to see how this all actually transpires. We'll find out soon. No Way Home is coming out soon, and then we'll finally be able to know. All right, next up, an anonymous viewer writes, "Do you think that if audiences hate Eternals, that Marvel will alter Phase 4 and beyond to make them not as important?" No. Do you think they will just keep things the same and hope that audiences can accept the Eternals in future films as time go on? Well, first of all, that's a huge assumption you're asking. If audiences hate Eternals, that's a huge jump. We don't know how the audience is going to respond to it. And I've said that from the first day I've seen the movie. I have no idea. So they may love it. They may be okay with it. They might hate it, maybe. So that's a huge, huge, huge thing to assume. But okay, let's play the game. Let's assume for a second that the audiences hate this movie. Kevin Feige loves the movie, and that's all that matters to Kevin Feige. Kevin Feige did not get to being where he is because he lets fans tell him what to do. Kevin Feige has gotten to where he is because he follows his own gut. He follows his gut and the counsel of a trusted set of generals that he surrounds himself with, a small circle of trusted generals that he surrounds himself with, and filmmakers he believes in. Kevin Feige loves Eternals. I'll tell you right now, it doesn't matter what you think of it or what I think of it. Kevin Feige loves that movie. He loves what it represents, and he's going to move forward with his plans. And so far, he's 23-2. His winning record is 23-2. So nobody can tell him he's wrong, right? So no, if audiences love it, it's not going to change Kevin Feige's course. If audiences are indifferent to Eternals, it is not going to make Kevin Feige change his course. If audiences hate Eternals, it is not going to make Kevin Feige change his course. Kevin Feige is not what the old regime at DC used to be, which was totally reactionary. They're not like that anymore. DC has made improvements in that. They're not like that anymore. But, you know, a number of years ago, that was one of the biggest problems with DC. They were total reactionists. Oh no, this one test thing did this. Oh no, change everything that we're doing. Ah! Kevin Feige's not like that. Kevin Feige's not like that. Like Yoda says, "My own counsel will I keep." that was a terrible Yoda, by the way, that I just did. But the only thing that matters is Kevin Feige likes this movie. He loves this movie. And there he's going to keep on with his plan. And if it does hit a road bump, like, oh, audiences didn't like this one that we did, that's fine. We're 23-3. They'll probably like the next one we do. We're going to stick the course. They're not reactionists. They have a plan. He's going to stick to his plan. All right, next up. And that's the difference between him and losers. And that's often both in sports and in life and in business and in the movies. The difference between the winners and the losers are often the ones who stick to their plan and know how to make adjustments to their courses without being total knee-jerk reactionists. Kevin Feige's got a plan. He knows his plan's good. He knows he's good at what he does. He's going to trust his plan. They're going to move forward. All right, Darth Carlitos writes, "Dune is highly inspired by Arab/North African history and culture, etc. I found it a bit of a slap in the face that they cast Javier Bardem as Stigler. Javier Bardem is from Spain, colonizer, who hasn't got the best history with the area. Thoughts? Great actor, though." I'm going to be honest with you, Darth Carlitos. I think that's a really bad way of looking with things. What did Javier Bardem do? And if you want to judge somebody not on themselves and the nature of their character and their actions, and you want to start passing judgments on them because of what their great-great-great-grandfather may have done, I think that's a slippery, dangerous, terrible slope. I think that is a terrible slope. Actors are people who pretend to be things that they are not. Now, if you want to go out and find an alien from a desert planet to play Stigler, great. Otherwise, he's a Earth human man. And I don't think you should say he's inappropriate because he doesn't come from the right bloodline. I can't get on board with you with that, man. And if you want to consider Javier Bardem's very existence a slap in the face, I don't know, man. You live your life your way. I'll live my life my way, but I cannot agree with you on that, brother. I cannot agree with you on that. All right, next up. John Chung writes, "Hey, John, can we say No Way Home is kind of like live action Into the Spider-Verse?" Well, no, we haven't seen the movie. We have no idea what it's like. No Way Home succeeded in bringing villains and inanimate objects to the MCU, whereas Into the Spider-Verse failed to do it. What? Both for selfish personal reasons as well. Bring on the filthy. What did Into the Spider-Verse fail to do? You cannot fail at something that you were never trying to do in the first place. You cannot fail at something that you were never, ever trying to do in the first place. Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse was never trying to bring things into the MCU. You can't say, well, you know, John, just so you know, John, yesterday, little Bobby, 13-year-old Bobby at his school, he won the science fair at his school, and you failed to do that yesterday. How come little Bobby succeeded at winning the science fair and you failed to win the science fair? Because I was never in the fucking science fair. I don't go to little Bobby's school. I was never trying to win the science fair. But John, nonetheless, you failed to win the science fair when little 13-year-old Bobby did. Explain that. What are we talking about? No Way Home succeeded in bringing villains into the match to the MCU, whereas Into the Spider-Verse failed to do it. I have no idea what you're talking about, brother. I mean, I might be misunderstanding you here, John. I might be misunderstanding you here, but I don't know what you're saying when you say No Way Home succeeded in bringing villains to the end and objects to the MCU, whereas Into the Spider-Verse failed to do it. What are we talking about? That's like saying, yeah, No Country for Old Men, with the aforementioned Javier Bardem. No Country for Old Men, excellent, excellent movie. Yeah, it's a great movie and everything, but it failed to bring villains into the MCU. What? Anyway, so I'll just leave it at that. Again, I'm probably misunderstanding what you're trying to say. This is probably on me. This is probably on me. So we'll just leave it at that. Thanks for writing in, dude. All right, and our final question today, and this gets us all caught up on all the questions that had been sent up that had been sent into the show this morning, right up until when the show ended, comes to us from James Argenta, who writes, "Disney Plus Day is next Friday. Do you have any predictions? Mine is we get Kenobi teaser or footage since we got a Boba Fett teaser on the first. Also, if there is a live stream event, will you watch along after the disappointment of DC Fandom 2? All right, so two things. It's funny you ask that because me and Christian Harloff, me and Harloff were just on the phone yesterday. Yeah, he and I were just talking on the phone yesterday and we were talking about Disney Plus Day coming up and what do we think is going to happen at it. And absolutely 100%. 100% I believe that we are going to see Obi-Wan footage or trailer at it. We may even see, I'll keep that one in my pocket. But yeah, I think we're going to see a lot of stuff. I think we're going to see a lot of stuff from the upcoming MCU shows. I think we're going to see a lot of stuff from like Obi-Wan. I think we're going to see stuff. I mean, I think we're going to get a lot of stuff. And if now I'm also not going to get too terribly excited, because whereas this year's fandom was terrible, it was absolutely terrible, last year's fandom was awesome. I mean, I really liked last year's fandom, and then they dropped the ball this year. The Disney Investor Day live stream was awesome, but that doesn't automatically mean this Disney Plus Day is going to be awesome. But yes, to answer your question, I will be doing a live stream watch along with the Disney Plus Day presentation, just as I did for DC Fandom. I'm going to do that for the Disney Plus Day thing as well. So hopefully it's better than DC Fandom Day 2 was. So that's what I'll say on that. Anyway, thanks for sending that in, James. And with that down, guys, that'll do it for this installment of the companion videos. Guys, thank you so much. And again, big thank you to all you guys who sent in those questions. Number one, because you gave us great fun things to talk about. But number two, you supported this channel as you did it. And all of us involved with the John Campus Show, thank you guys so very much for your support. Okay, guys, don't forget the John Campus Show returns tomorrow. Hope to see you guys then. And don't forget, if you want to right now send in comment or question to be on the show tomorrow, you can start sending them in now. You don't have to wait for the show to start. Again, just go down to the description of this video, click on the tip link, or enter it in manually at www.streamelements.com/movieblogtv/tip. And thank you guys so much for all your support. Okay, guys, that'll do it for me for now. My name's John Campia, and until next time, my friends, bye-bye.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.